Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is Joseph Hart. I have to apologize. My voice is a little hoarse tonight, guys, but I'll make it through. Before I bring him on, I want to remind you to subscribe to Forbidden Knowledge News on lbry.tv. We're available on all popular podcast platforms, and definitely check us out on Rockfin. That's where you can get all our premium content. Forbidden Knowledge NewsCon this year and last year is on Rockfin. All our regular shows, all of our premium content, and all the content from all the awesome creators on Rockfin. Just click the link in the description or visit rockfin.com/FKNplus. And finally, if you're getting to that gray hair stage in your life and you're ready to take control of your health, check out C60 Purple Power. C60 may be the most powerful antioxidant known to man, with free radical neutralizing properties. I feel great, I feel younger, and you should too. You can get C60 for your pets. Check out their website by clicking the link in the description and take back control of your health today. If that link doesn't work, just visit c60purplepower.com and use coupon code KNOWLEDGE10. Tonight I want to welcome to the show Joseph Hart. Astronomy has been a hobby for him since childhood, and he had his first UFO experience in August 1964. He then attended Pratt Institute School of Engineering, and he has been to 3-week-long CE5 trainings with Dr. Stephen Greer. Joseph, welcome. How are you doing tonight?
Very good, Chris. Thanks for having me. By the way, I use C60.
Oh, yeah, C60 is great. How's your experience with it?
As well.
Good.
It's been good. It's been good.
Yeah, I've been looking forward to it. Tonight we're going to be discussing your experiences with CE5. It's becoming a somewhat mainstream discussion in certain circles. I personally have never tried it. I have had contact through a meditative state, though. It's quite a different experience than most that I've heard. But I'd like to find out what got you interested in CE5. And for those that aren't familiar, explain what CE5 is.
Okay, well, CE5 is what Stephen Greer actually coined the phrase, close encounters of the fifth kind, which is actually human-initiated contact. So instead of the other close encounters, 1, 2, 3, and 4, you know, it's going out with intention to make contact with our ET siblings in a peaceful manner.
And what was it that got you interested in this?
Well, astronomy was my hobby. And in the summer of 64, my dad had bought me a telescope, and a buddy of mine, we used to go out every night, you know, stargazing. And he was a UFO buff. He was reading the books by George Adamski, which were written in the 50s and early 60s. And, you know, he was cluing me in on that. And one night while I was working the telescope, and he was sitting on the lawn waiting for me to get something in the viewfinder, he noticed coming out of the south, a silent hovering orb of light. And he pointed it out, and it was moving quite slowly, but then when it got to the apex of the sky, it stopped right above us. So, you know, he said, get it in the telescope, you know, get it in the telescope. But it was straight up above me, and the telescope wouldn't go 180 degrees straight up. So I couldn't get it in the viewfinder. And then, suddenly, the orb descended maybe about 20 degrees from the apex, such that I could get it in the viewfinder. It was just stopped and hovering. It's almost as if it knew we were watching it and said, oh, they can't see us, let's move down. So we got it in the viewfinder, and it was the classical amber elliptical egg. And we've taken turns looking at it when all of a sudden out of the east came another identical orb drifting silently toward the other one. And they lined up in tandem next to each other. And we had them both in the viewfinder for several minutes. Then all of a sudden, the one that came from the east took off very quickly to the north and disappeared into the void. And when that one was out of sight, the first one from the south took off to the west in the same manner. And then after that, my friend wrote a report to Project Blue Book and NICAP, which was the National Investigation Committee of Aerial Phenomenon. And they responded saying it was confirmed by the Naval Observatory over in Connecticut. We were on Long Island. And six other independent observers, and would we mind if they came and debriefed us? So, of course, he replied. They set up a date, and they actually came in black suits and a black car and sat us down, asked us questions. And when we left, we said, well, when are we going to find out what you came up with? And they said, oh, you won't hear from us anymore, but thank you very much for your report. And so I always carried an interest. And I just went through life, la-di-da, like every man. We go to work, we pay our bills. And then about 2008, I started perusing YouTube. And we all know what's up there. And I came across Stephen Greer. And what I loved about him is, you know, he goes out and summons, essentially, the ET craft to him. And the whole human initiated thing just really fascinated me. So after about a year or so, I ponied up and I went to Mount Shasta in 2009. And that's basically how it started and where it got to CE5 with Dr. Greer.
That's really cool. Now, the experience with the UFO where these gentlemen in the black suits came, you didn't have any other contact with them after they didn't try and, you know, contact you again later on?
No, not ever.
That's very interesting. Now, could you tell us about how was your experience with Dr. Greer for the CE5 trainings?
Oh, Mount Shasta was the first one. And as most of us know, Mount Shasta is just an awesome place to be for just about any reason. And we all met up for orientation on a Sunday night in this gorgeous, huge log cabin tucked up into the foothills in the woods. And everybody introduced themselves. Dr. Greer gave a short talk. And then we went outside after dark for a short sky watch. And it was awesome in that within 20 minutes, we had a welcoming committee of those classic ET lights that, you know, you hear about it, John Gilliland's Mount Adams type thing. And it was a huge number of them that night. It's almost like they were all there to say hello to us, you know. Then the rest of the week, you meet after lunch for a four-hour training and lecture where he goes through meditations, remote viewing. So, you know, when people say, well, he charges so much, well, you're getting 4 hours a day of lessons. And there's 1 hour a day where he shows you a lot of his videos and documentation, stuff that he doesn't publish. And then we go out for the sky watches. And they were in Mount Shasta. They were awesome basically every night. We even had military flybys that went around the mountain, and the ET craft would scatter and leave when that came. We had a security breach where a red laser dot landed on Dr. Greer's chest, and we had to scurry out of there and change locations.
Wow.
Just an awesome experience. And one of the nuttiest things is the comic manner in which some of these ET craft would conduct themselves. Like if you remember the old game, video game Asteroid, we would shoot these things out that would bounce off all the meteors and whatnot. Well, there was one ET craft that was mimicking the asteroid videos where it was bouncing off different stars and it would speed up, slow down, hit another star, speed up, slow down, hit another star. Another I felt I made mental contact with, I would ask to blink twice and it would blink twice. Then I'd ask it to quantum jump from left to right and it would blink out and blink on in a different location. There was one that did a figure eight over a small propeller plane that night, and we all laughed about it. And then the radar detectors mimicked the laugh as well. So they have a sense of humor. The Mount Shasta expedition was simply awesome. Every single night we were out there. I actually met Costa Macris that started his CE5 group there. Ricky Butterfast. And several others whose name escaped me at the moment. Emery Smith, who actually furnished his security for the first two trainings I was on. So it was really an awesome experience.
Besides actually seeing these craft and having like a mental connection to some of these, did you have any other, I guess you could say, contact experiences or communication with these ETs?
Personally, I did not, but there were several people that, you know, and I'm a bit of a skeptic, you know, being a trained engineer for a few years, not that I did that as a career, but I think along those lines, they would claim they would get these messages and, you know, feelings communicated to them. But, you know, personally, no, just one night I had a dream that, you know, I had an ET in the form of an owl kind of giving me instructions on a blackboard. But other than that, no, just the visual experiences.
Now, based on Dr. Greer's information, do you know what races of beings that you're being contacted that are showing up in the sky?
He always termed them as some of the ships he would say were celestial, which he defines as highly advanced beings that can travel interdimensionally. A lot of other craft he would say are physical craft. He had one female that he gave a name to that I cannot remember, that used to come in a brilliant blue craft. And she would always arrive with some sort of fanfare. You know, she would come in real fast and then slow down and power up and then take off. You know, and she was supposed to be a highly ranked celestial being. You know, but these things, basically, I love Dr. Greer and the contact, but a lot of the backstories I could not verify, you know.
Yeah, of course. There's so much in this field.
That, you know, yeah, he never said these are grays, these are Tolites, these are, you know, Arcturian. He never differentiated in that way. He basically said that the people that would come to these contact events from other galaxies and other star systems were basically from all over. You know, his feeling is that the universe teems with sentient life, much of which is way more advanced than us. You know, and that what they wanted was unity, that they were basically grooming us for our future.
Now, some people, some researchers believe that there's a danger of contacting the wrong type of entity. Excuse me, the wrong type of entities when you're doing this. And, you know, some people think it's, you know, just straight up demonic all around. You know, I don't share that view, but I'm wondering, what are your thoughts on this? Do you think that there are malevolent ETs out there that we could be in danger of accidentally contacting?
I believe that there's yin and yang in everything. I'm sure not every ET is benevolent. But I don't think ETs of the malevolent type respond to CE5 because of the intention we put out. I just don't think it's on their frequency. There's never been, in my experience, and Dr. Greer says in his, there's never been a malevolent experience of CE5.
Now, could you give us a little overview of the like the protocols that you do for CE5?
Yes. In a nutshell, we meditate and then visualize ourselves traveling away from the planet. And basically what we call vectoring from out there, vectoring any ETs in the area or pick up the mental frequencies exactly where we are. And that's how they basically pick up on where we are, what our intentions are. And then they show up if they can, if they feel it's safe and secure. And that's it in a nutshell. It's as simple as that. There's nothing complicated or mysterious about it. You know, we just ask them to show up, let them know where we are.
Now, based on what you've witnessed, there's no way that you could say that these are military craft. These are definitely not something that we could maneuver and produce ourselves, right?
You know, I thought about that often, and I feel like military may indeed be able to mimic a lot of the technology. But as far as of what we know in our daily lives, no, these are not conventional craft. They definitely outperform, outmaneuver. They don't look anything like it. And quite frankly, I can't see. It would cost them an awful lot to show up if they were there, say, to perpetrate a hoax. You know. So no, I don't think they're military in any way, shape, or form. And like I said, at Mount Shasta, one night there was military jets sweeping the area. And all the ET craft would leave when they showed up. But curiously, one time, there was an ET craft behind the military craft, kind of trailing it, as if he was a watchdog to make sure, you know, they didn't pull anything left-handed.
Right. Now, what do you think about the abduction phenomenon where, you know, people have terrifying experiences where they've been taking in the night and, you know, not necessarily, you know, it may be terrifying for them at first and then they have regressions and they look back and, you know, it may have been a more peaceful experience, but they have experiences where they see their hybrid children or, you know, they're doing some kind of DNA or fertility experiments on these people. And it's not necessarily a pleasant experience, but, you know, not sure what to make of it. What do you think is going on in these you know, than these abduction phenomena?
Well, basically, military actually possesses what you can call stagecraft, whereby they have reverse engineered, even at least to a rudimentary point, vehicles that we would recognize as quote unquote UFOs, number one. And they could have hybrid beings or artificial intelligent beings. And also they can, they have technology where they can holographically implant visions and memories in these people where these things may not have taken place at all, but that people are totally convinced that they did take place. I just don't go for the malevolent abduction theories. I really don't. I think people make it much more complicated than it really is. It may not be as simple as we'd like it to be either. But no, I'm not into the whole malevolent abduction thing.
Now, what do you think about what's happening now with, I guess you could say it's modern disclosure. I don't know, you know, who to trust or where to look when it comes to this, because it's coming from our mainstream media and government and people like Tom DeLonge. I mean, you know, it's not your most credible sources for this type of information that I know of, but it seems like they're really pushing it now the past few years. What do you think is going on here? Do you think it's a disinfo campaign of some sort or something else?
Well, yeah, that's where I think I coined the phrase myself when I call it the UFOlogy bread and circus rock star roadshow. Okay. I think disclosure itself, and people say, when are we going to have disclosure? We've had disclosure since Kenneth Arnold in 1947 flew over the Cascades in Oregon and reported it to the media. I think people need to understand the difference between disclosure, which is being done by the people, and confirmation, which what they want from the government. And that's where we get into the people you talked about, because almost all the people you mentioned talk about security concerns. So once again, they're planting fear, false evidence appearing real. And they do that for a lot of reasons. Dr. Greer thinks there's going to be a false flag alien attack as like, you know, the last ditch effort to unify the world against one common enemy and start a malevolent world government. And he's done all he can to head that off. And I think guys like Tom DeLonge, just look at who works for his company. What is it called again? Star Academy?
Yeah, To the Stars Academy.
They're all To the Stars Academy. All those guys were high-ranking insiders.
Oh, yeah.
CIA people, Department of Defense, DARPA. So anything that comes from them is basically pre-approved by the government and is actually putting a paradigm in the public's head that, once again, is fear-based. And that's how I feel about all of that. And meanwhile, disclosure goes on and on and on. Dr. Greer, this is 20th anniversary of his 2001 National Press Club event, where he had all those whistleblowers sitting there for 4 hours, and a couple billion people saw it worldwide. Ever since then, it's a people's disclosure program, and that's what CE5 is about. You know, and as far as what I believe, I don't use the word believe very often. It's mostly about thinking and feeling and knowing. Like, I don't believe in ET presence. I know that, you know, they have been here probably thousands of years.
Now, when we're talking about this disclosure movement that we're seeing right now, we've also recently had the Israeli space commander come out and say that, yes, there is a Galactic Federation. You know, during the Trump presidency, he signed in this recent COVID bill that we're supposed to see this disclosure of this information, 180 days for Congress to release all these files. And it's you know, like you said, Dr. Greer believes that there could be a false flag alien invasion. I don't know. It's possible. With everything going on, it kind of makes you look in that direction because I really don't trust some of the sources that this is coming from, you know?
Well, you know, when you look at Gaia, and I'm not going to mention any names, but you get these wonderful blue avian stories and jump rooms to Mars, and people spending 20 years and then being dropped back into the timeline as an 8-year-old again. And nobody, a lot of these guys don't have anything but anecdotal from their mouth to our ears. They have no proof. They get a little corroboration, but you know, if I listened to a couple of them long enough and I had a military background, I'm sure I could weave a corroborating story as well. But there is no hard evidence for any of this stuff. And I want to know is if He was taken as an 8-year-old and spent 20 years and then returned as an 8-year-old. He had to be dropped into a different timeline. So he came from a different timeline. And then again, you know, I'm not so up on this whole timeline thing. You know, people want to think about that there is no such thing as time and you can travel past, present, and future, or you have a doppelganger by 10,000 times living different lives in different universes. You know, let's keep it simple. You know, we know what we know and we know what we don't know. And most of it is what we don't know. But yeah, misinformation. There's a lot of misinformation. The convolution of all the people who are in this business right now is overwhelming. It can't all be true. And personally, I think there's misinformation, disinformation, and faction, which is real stuff mixed with fiction. So it's all intentionally going to confuse you. And that's why with Dr. Greer, it's pure. You go there, you learn the protocols, you go out at night, something shows up or it doesn't. And it's more than just visual. They send signals to the radar detectors, the trimeters get readings, the cameras pick up frequencies that we can't see with our own eye. And Dr. Greer has thousands of things that he won't release. A lot of it's probably for his Dead Man's Trigger that he talked about in the Sirius documentary.
Now, do you think that these... Go ahead.
No, I think we're in a situation where we're purposely being confused. You know, there's lots of reasons for the cover. Back in the day, they knew militarily they couldn't do anything about it, and they worried about religion and how the populace would take it. But now, I think it's more about a cover-up of advanced technology that exists with a runaway civilization, and they don't want to share it with us. They don't want to share life longevity, medical cures, free energy, which, you know, blows up the whole petroleum paradigm, space travel. They don't want to share it, which gets into some other stuff that blends with the situation we're in now. But as far as Dr. Greer, even Dr. Greer, now I went to two trainings 8 months apart, 2009 and 2010. And he had security. He had an entire entourage of people, almost all of whom are in the documentary Sirius. And then in Durango in 2015, he showed up with his wife. The entourage was gone. There was no security. I contacted the event coordinator that after that, that had handled the first two that I was on. Another really good friend of mine contacted Dr. Bravo, who financed a lot of his stuff. She was a very nice looking blonde doctor that basically gave up her career. And she told him things that she made him promise not to tell anyone. He calls me his best friend, and to this day, he won't tell me. And the coordinator I called basically said, well, I'd rather not talk about it, but it was disappointing and a regrettable situation. So it made me wonder, especially when he showed up with just his wife, no security, no entourage. And basically he broke no new ground. So I began to wonder if he, as well as the rest of the whole rock and roll roadshow of ufology, having to some degree been co-opted to the point that, hey, go out and do your thing, but this is the line we're drawing. And even the world that Dr. Greer paints as a utopian future to me, is really a globalist future of basically one world government, free energy. And people have to understand that progress is destruction. You know, people who tout things like solar energy, they ought to look into the process of making a solar panel, the mining that goes on, the chemicals that need to be used, the transportation, and then the disposal of the old ones that wear out. Any progress is equal to destruction. So the entire paradigm has to change. And it's sort of like the whole system has to go down before you can build it up, because it's completely convoluted. And I think now the whole ET cover-up actually blends with what we're going through now. I think it's all of it dovetails. I don't think any of it's a one-off. And I think it all dovetails for a larger agenda.
Well, let's talk about that. I do too. I mean, I think that there's agenda on top of agenda on top of agenda. But, you know, what's the main big picture behind it all? I don't know. I'd like to get your thoughts on what do you think is there a larger kind of conspiracy at play when it comes to everything going on, which, I mean, it's pretty obvious that is, but I want to get your thoughts on it. And when it comes to this disclosure movement and these benevolent extraterrestrials, is it true that they have like this, Star Trek protocol that they can't get involved with human affairs or something like that? What do you think about that?
Pretty much that we need to fix ourselves before we're allowed into the club, so to speak. And they can't do it for us because the simian-minded human who's 98% chimp, and if you know about how chimps are, when two tribes of chimps meet in the jungle, you know, they fight to the death. And it seems we have that same mentality. And until we lose that mentality, we're not getting in the club. Insofar as the larger agenda, it goes back to what I just brought up before. If you had technology that would cure all diseases and you could live to be 250 years old or more, would you want to share that with 7.5 billion people? If you were able to travel to the stars, you can't take everybody with you. So you don't want to share that. If you're going to crush the petroleum paradigm and supply free energy, do you really want to do that to 7.5 billion people? So if we were all in possession of that and we were billionaires, who could influence governments, run the corporations that basically tie up all the media, all the energy, all the resources, control the food, control money. You know, you would. I mean, if you could, you would. And you can't share it. So you either have to rule over everybody, perhaps hope that you can bring the population down, if you get my drift, and get everybody in lockstep. And I know we've all heard that because of Rockefeller documents from long, long ago showed a protocol that they wanted to implement called lockstep. I read Klaus Schwab's book, the head of the World Economic Forum, and it says, the virus by name and the Great Reset, okay? And basically, in a very nice way, if you read that totally on a neutral level, you'd say, wow, he's got a great idea. Government and corporate partnerships, with government basically directing those corporations, then you would become a stakeholder when you were a worker, provided you adhered to social contracts. It sounds really like a benevolent 1984, a benevolent way to present a 1984 type of thing.
Well, that's very interesting.
And they want to bring the third world.
No, it's very interesting.
And I think it all blends in.
That you say that, because I have a couple of researcher friends that have some somewhat high-level contacts that believe that this whole thing is kind of, I don't know if it's being orchestrated or just being kind of suggested by an actual off-planet civilization to actually progress us to the next stage of evolution. It's a very interesting theory, and I've heard it from a couple of different researchers. What do you think about that?
I think there's a lot of credence to it. I really do. As far as off-world, I don't know exactly if it's David Icke's Archons of Reptilians or what it might exactly be. But I think we're headed for transhumanism, which is where we merge with AI. I think the bourgeois won't be able to work, so that's where you get universal basic income, which are already getting people used to that by, you know, issuing these piddling checks every 3 to 6 months. I'm personally notice inflation at a very high rate when I go to the food store or when I check on prices for things I wanted to buy 4 years ago, and now I have the money, but the price went up. And when you print 40% of the currency that's ever been printed in the entire United States history in only the last 14 months with nothing backing it, it's ink on paper or it's digits into computers, you're obviously diluting the money supply. Which gets me to the point of mentioning cryptocurrency. You know, I mean, I've put a piddling amount of savings into cryptocurrency since last summer when I actually was able to put a little money aside. And instead of getting 0.8% annual interest, that money's increased in value by 250% in 8 months. And it's with Bitcoin, they don't make any more Bitcoin. It's a fixed amount divided into the market share, the amount of money that's capitalized there.
Right.
I don't know how long they're going to allow that to go either, because, you know, I think the dollar is walking on eggs right now, and probably all fiat currencies. When you look at what's happening in Europe, it looks like martial law whenever there's a march or a demonstration against any of the measures that governments are taking. These guys are dressed with shields and riot helmets and everything from the science fiction movies we saw 10 years ago. Now anybody who fails to see that is really not paying attention, or they're just cognitively dissonant to all of this. And going back to the ET question, I think it's becoming closer and closer to where it's going to become extremely obvious that ET is here. We are not alone. And I think the powers that be are afraid to lose control once that becomes common knowledge. So that also could be a reason for all this totalitarian control to keep us safe. Same answer for everything, and to instill fear, false evidence appearing real. A couple of my mainstay little things there. And then back to the UFOlogist Bread and Circus roadshow. They're letting them have it to as long as they don't cross a certain line. And funny thing is, almost nobody, except for maybe Paola Harris, nobody mentions Dr. Greer's name. Have you ever mentioned, ever noticed that If you ever noticed, you could watch all these guys' videotapes. You know, even Emery Smith, who was his security dude and a big figure in the movie Sirius. He doesn't mention Dr. Greer anymore, maybe in passing. Richard Dolan, all of those guys.
It's become an extremely controlled narrative. I mean, when you have people like Lou Elizondo telling you about UFOs, it makes me want to pull my hair out every time I hear that guy talk. I don't know what else to do about that. It's getting ridiculous.
The expression on his face is like, you know, he's all nervous about it. That the security issue.
Yeah, always the security issue. That's what it comes down to. Now, in your email, you in your talking points, you wrote why the question has been so complicated and why the cover up is not a one off. Could you kind of go into a little bit more detail about that?
Well, yeah, I think we almost covered
we touched
that.
On it a little bit. Yeah.
Yeah. Well, you know, the unacknowledged special access projects. That are going on, you know, once you have the degree of secrecy you have about the extraterrestrial question, you basically have a network to siphon funds and do whatever you want with them. I know for a fact from certain insiders that I know personally through people that, you know, the CIA... basically makes a lot of money in arms dealing and drug dealing and siphons that into unacknowledged special access projects. And like I said, the advanced technology, space travel, medicine, energy, life longevity, artificial intelligence, the level of technology that exists that we don't even know about yet is going to be broken out once society is put under the thumb and have, you know, basically they want everybody sucking government teeth. So dependent on government, expecting government to fix everything. Eventually government's going to do it, but it's going to be a social contract. You know, to me, China was financed, basically. Mao's revolution was financed by Rothschild banks. The man who wrote all his speeches worked for Rothschild and handled all their finances. And that's sort of the New World Order beta test. And now China's starting to emerge and flexing their muscle. And I don't think it's any coincidence that the current pathogen was directed from Chinese mainland one way or the other, you know?
Yeah. And it looks like the direction we're headed. I mean, I get less and less hopeful each day because of the amount of people that, I once saw waking up, and it doesn't seem that way anymore. It seems like more and more people are just becoming complacent with what's happening and that this is just going to roll out no matter what people do. I don't know. It's just making me lose hope a little bit just to see the amount of complacency and people not speaking up or doing anything, you know?
Yeah. In fact, let me give you just a little bit of personal history on where I am and where I came from just the last 5 years. I grew up in New York City. I worked the majority of my career in Miami. And when I came out to the 2015 training with Dr. Greer to Colorado, I had my eyes open. My head was on a turret looking for a sparsely populated, affordable place to move to. And I'm in a huge valley with about 6 people per square mile in South Central Colorado. I was able to buy a house cash with the equity in my Miami home. And I moved here because I've been down the rabbit hole so long, I actually expected a pathogen that would cause a pandemic and require these nearly mandatory jabs, et cetera, et cetera. And I came out here 5 years ago. I kept my mouth shut. My friends thought I was crazy. And then last spring, they all said, you know, now I think you're a genius. And I told them I expected the shit to hit the fan all along. And, you know, once I, you know, I knew the playbook. I wrote an essay that I published on Facebook in April that told them what was going to happen for the next year and a half. And so far, I'm 12 of that 18 months through it, and everything has come to pass. Not because I'm a soothsayer, but because I knew the playbook and I saw right through it. I even called Luke Krakowski out when he was still living in New York, and he was so afraid. And I said, Luke, come on, man. You know, say what's really on your mind. We got to start calling out the tinfoil hats, and we have to start telling people what's really going on. And I think this is the perfect time for disclosure once they have everybody under their button. I think what might come out at the end of that 180 days is going to be heavily redacted. And when they do a document release, it's millions and millions of pages that are 85% redacted. So all these people that are hoping for disclosure, I mean, really, you know, you're not going to read the script for Close Encounters of a Third Kind. It's not going to have any detail in it. Now, how do you feel about that?
Well, I agree. I agree. I think it's going to be heavily redacted, and I think we're not going to get anything close to what we want. But, you know, like you said earlier, disclosure is going to come from us and researchers that are independent researchers that are really looking into this. Now, when it comes to the phenomenon itself, I lean towards this is more of an interdimensional or extra-dimensional thing rather than these beings are coming from different planets. I don't know. It's just my own personal theory about it. What do you think? Do you think that this is more of a beyond the spectrum of our vision type thing, or are they traveling on their little tin can ships throughout the galaxy? I don't know. What do you think?
I think there's life on different star systems that know how to travel interdimensionally. You can't travel superluminal without basically going over what Dr. Greer calls the crossing point of light, you know, maybe an area like similar to the astral plane where time and space don't really matter. And we're traveling in a different dimension. You know, the human, everything's a frequency, but as humans, we can only experience about 0.5% of that frequency. So there's a lot going on we are yet to find out about. And I believe that they don't live in those other dimensions. I believe they've learned to traverse within dimensions away from ours that can get them over these vast distances in short periods of time without the time dilation in Einstein's equations. You know, if you travel the speed of light, you know, I go somewhere and I travel for 4 years, but you've gone through 20 years or 40 years. That doesn't happen when you travel interdimensionally. You do it pretty much in real time.
Now, to close out, I want to get your thoughts on if you think that we are a genetically kind of engineered species that's kind of like an experiment for these beings to see if we can evolve to a certain state. I don't know. It sometimes seems like I'm in an experiment myself with everything that's happening and all the experience that I've had and comparing other people's experiences. It's very synchronistic when you think about it that way. What do you think?
I think when you go back into mythology, the gods, the Anunnaki from Sumeria, when you go through all that stuff, and then even the genetic research we've done, things we used to call junk DNA, we called it junk because we couldn't explain it. And now they're finding out that there's a percentage of our DNA that doesn't have a heritage per se that it popped up. So I do believe there's been an intervention somewhere along our evolutionary line, maybe more than once, where we got tinkered with and upgraded, you know. We had phones with dial numbers, then we had touch tone numbers, then we had cordless home phones, you know, and now the cell phones are more powerful than the first computers we bought back in the 90s or even the early 2000s. So I think we've been upgraded the same way. As an experiment, I'm not so sure it's an experiment as much as basically an inventive, creative project.
That's a good way to look at it. Sounds better than an experiment, that's for sure. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on tonight. Before you head out, is there any social media, or if people would like to reach you or anything like that?
Well, I could be found under Joseph Hart on Facebook, you know, if they did want to reach out for any commentary. And I usually look at all my notifications. Other than that, I'm just enjoying life, tell you the truth. I'm 70 years old, retired. I'm glad to be living where I'm living, so I'm not in the mix of all my friends in the big cities. And what I do hope is people need their minds open, when, especially with the ET question, but they need not subscribe to any one way of thinking, because to me, belief is a foundation for slavery. There's only one thing that you should believe in, and that's source. There is a source. I believe the universe itself is intelligent and sentient. Other than that, belief should be suspended, and you really shouldn't subscribe to any one set of facts. That's what's so convoluted about everything, is that none of it can be condensed into one whole at all. And I think that's done on purpose. It's basically the divide and conquer. Everybody has different ideas about almost everything. And the only thing I can say to people is discernment is key. You know, the devil's in the details. Sometimes if it walks like a duck and quacks like a duck, it's a duck. And sometimes the digger you deep, the deeper you dig, the more confused you can become and the more off course you can be. So discernment is really the main thing. And I think you get that from centering your mind, whether it's meditation or relaxation, yoga, anything like that, but you can just center your mind and drink in what's fed to you, and you develop a natural filter. And like you said, when you said you were losing hope about what's going on now with all the wokeness that seems to have stopped happening, I think this whole situation sidetracked a lot of people, and they don't understand it's all part of the same agenda. And they think it's a one-off, and it's gotten them off their track. And that, again, I believe was by design.
Yeah, I'd have to agree with you. Joseph, thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was an excellent conversation, and I'd love to talk to you again in the future.
Anytime. And I'll stay with it and make sure I'm not redundant. If we get to talk again, we'll have something new.
Oh, that sounds great. Thank you so much again, Joseph. And until next time, everyone else, have a great evening.